Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg.
Hey everybody, this is Greg with the Brothers Wiss number 74. I'm feeling excited. I'm feeling a little hyped up today here in Texas. It's hot as balls. I've got the air conditioner down to 72 and my house is like 77 degrees. It just can't keep up. It's one of those days. But with us today, right above me, we have this Foxy Coxy. Say hi, Andrew.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Oh, that's so anticlimactic. You gotta be louder. You gotta be boisterous.
I just can't wait to see all the people who are like, really good, Andrew. And I'm like, I couldn't see that when we were recording.
All right, all the way from Australia. And then up and kind of to the left, we've got, who is that? Is that Miller? Could it be?
Hi.
You guys are such dicks. And then we've also got Dave from LA. What's happening, dude?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay.
Oh, that was better.
Yeah, right? A little peppy. Little.
Wait, when you introduced me, could we play Salt and Pepper Smush It? One of my favorites.
Is it really?
Yeah. Well, have you ever seen the Nextel commercial with
speaks volumes
the Smush It song?
No, I haven't.
I'm going to link that in YouTube when this podcast is done. You'll love it. It's great.
Okay. All right. I'll take your word for it.
It involves IT.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, I just realized, should I go and change into like a blue shirt? I feel like I'm messing up the vibe here.
just go topless. Just go topless, man.
delicious. Give the people what they want, Andrew. That's what you're all about. All right, let's get our vegetables out of the way. This cast, like so many of the former ones, is brought to you by Sonar.software. Scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP billing system, right? Bill your customers, make your life easier. Go and do yourself a favor, pop over to Sonar.software and give it a peek. Everybody else is. You might as well do the same. We also have a new patron this week. Or maybe it was last week, Matthew Wheeler. So in case you guys don't know, we have a Patreon-only Slack group, and it's growing. Pretty soon, we can't call it the Little Brothers Wiss. It's going to be like, you know, the moderately sized Brothers Wiss, something like that.
Magnum.
The magnum-sized Wiss.
I heard somewhere that supposedly all condoms are pretty much exactly the same size. They just... put different names or like, you know, like Magnum on one just to make you feel better about yourself sort of thing.
It
really is.
Yeah,
it's really giant. When we were kids, we would buy Magnum, fill them with water and just throw them off of our, I don't know, we were in a bunk at the time in camp. And dude, they're huge.
So at your summer camp, you had a box full of condoms. So you tell me?
All the time.
Like,
all the time.
Mate, if you were buying them to use as water balloons, definitely camp.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they're slippery, dude. You can't hold on to them. That's the hardest part. Once they're like 4 gallons big, you can't hold them. They're all made of shit.
I thought you can't hold on to them from the lube on them, but...
Exactly. I mean, they for some reason, they just slip right up your ass. It's amazing.
Still to this day, he can't figure out what's going on. Yeah, very, very odd turn. But yeah, Patreon-only Slack, really good conversation in there. Not so much of this, but other really good technical things. It's a safe place. It's a safe place to ask questions. That's why I ask so many dumb questions there and get a lot of good responses from you guys here. The three pictured, well, at least two of the three here give good responses. I'll let the viewers or the listeners decide which those are. Anyway, you guys ready to move on to some actual topics at hand?
Let's go for it.
All right. So let's look at the list. There's some Dragon Wave. It's a hardware manufacturer. I mean, everybody used to know who they were, and they've sort of fallen out of favor, I think. Maybe some of their equipment's a little too expensive for all of us poor Wisp guys. But they made a new announcement just recently. I saw Mike link it up, and people seem to be interested in it, that they've... What did they say? They introduced a new modem. You guys familiar with this? A new modem that's supposedly capable of doubling 256 QAM rates or 16 bits per second per hertz, which equates to 65,536 QAM at a 256 QAM noise level. Does that excite you guys? Is that a thing? all of this is sort of like voodoo until you put it in English for me. Some of this stuff just doesn't really. I know QAM is modulation rate, right? And so that is going to equate to how much you can move. What is that in English? Do you guys have any idea?
Is that sidebands? Like how many sidebands it's using for modulation?
Anyone? Crickets.
Anyone?
Crickets.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not the detail oriented guy when it comes to the radio stuff. Sounds interesting. I'm sure it's going to be crazy expensive like the rest of their kit. So I don't know. Maybe a deer can afford some of that. We'll see what he has to say. Moving right along, since that was a dead topic. there's obviously a lot of people have been getting hit by MikroTik exploits lately. And so I thought we could just quickly talk about what is the bare minimum required to protect your MikroTik. How could you do it in the least number of steps? Obviously, some jackass is going to say, well, unplug it. That would be a good way to protect it. But but in serious, honest terms, what do you think the bare minimum is to protect your MikroTik? I think I could name that tune in two notes. I think you could protect it with like two firewall rules. What would you guys say?
So obviously there's a standard set of MikroTik firewall rules that most people are just like, don't need that, and then put their own ones in. I think what used to be the main one for people, and the one that I would see, is people blocking DNS from the outside world, because otherwise you'd get hammered with everyone trying to use you as a resolver and spam out to other people. But the big one has been the management access. So even without firewall rules, you can restrict your MikroTik management access down to either private addresses only using the services tool, or turn off the services that you don't use, and then restrict something like Winbox access to just IP addresses that you know about, like IP addresses that are your admin addresses. So if you're not operating on a static address and you can't put a static listing in there, MikroTik has a dynamic DNS function you can use, and it's literally add a rule in that says source address is admin IP list, whatever you want to call it. Go into your admin IP list, put your mum's house, your grandma's house, all of those ones in there, so no matter where you are, you can get back into your own routers and things. It's super simple. People are just like, I'll leave Winbox, it's easier if I can just access from anywhere. And then the hackers come in, you're like, those damn Russians, Chinese, Australians trying to hack our
living. Uh-huh. So you touched on a lot of different things. One is in IP services, turn off the things you don't want. That's pretty simple, right? And I think that goes for every manufacturer.
If you're using Telnet, you shouldn't be.
You're doing it wrong. something else of note is just making an allowance in IP services isn't enough anymore, right? So the Winbox exploits, even if you had people denied, I guess, or they weren't in that IP services list and they still had access, it still gave them enough access to the Winbox service.
Still answering.
Right. And so the exploits were still happening. Yeah. So if you were to say create address lists, just like you said, with the people that can connect, and then create a firewall rule that says, if it's not established or related, on the input chain, and it's not coming from my address list, drop it, right? So if I don't want you here, you don't come in. And that would pretty well protect everything, right? But I was talking to somebody last week, maybe. Everything's sort of run together. I did training this week, so my brain is melted. But he was talking about, how do I see people occasionally scanning or occasionally doing that, or, I've got PPTP open, right? Or L2TP, or, name your tunneling protocol. He's like, well, how do I firewall that thing off? And my answer was, well, you sort of can't, because if you have road warriors, you don't know where they're going to come from, right? And I was thinking about it, say the L2TP service that MikroTik is using, the code has a 0-day exploit. Well, you can't really firewall for 0 days like that, when you need the world to get in. So what do you do in those scenarios? I was thinking, if somebody's trying to, hammer at you. You know, they're trying to brute force your passwords. Well, you could have something reflexive, right? You could see those failed attempts and maybe block them. But if it's a zero day, I mean, what do you do in those scenarios, right? Like, what can you do?
What about port knocking?
God, yeah. Do people still do that shit?
Yeah, dude.
Wow. Okay.
It's actually really effective.
It is interesting. But I mean, I guess that's one thing. What I do is, first of all, I block all of China, all of Russia, all of Africa.
Oh, are you blocking the Latvians?
Yeah, dude. Why do I need that shit? I don't need that. All right? I can't. It's funny.
Wait, this is just input to your router, right? Not forwarding.
Oh, all the above, buddy. All the above. Yeah. I don't service anybody in Africa. Why do I need to allow Africa or Russia? I mean, no. I have a couple of customers in Israel and in the UK, and of course they're on static IP. They are not road warriors. It's just offices. You know, and if I get more international customers that are road warriors, well, then I'll have to, you know, maybe loosen some security. But first of all, I just block all internationals because why the fuck do I need them? Get out of here. All my customers are in America, UK, and Israel. Second thing I do is change the Winbox port number. I change the default admin username. Of course, with 0 day, I don't think that matters. And like you said, I have an address list with me, with my IP of my home, my office, a couple of guys that work with me. Their office, their homes, and that goes into obviously a list. And yes, some of them are dynamic. And Microtik, like you said, Alex, IP Cloud, just enable that. Take that. What did I say something wrong? What the hell's that face?
Who's Alex?
Oh shit! I fucked up. shit!
You're fired. You're fired, dude.
I thought that was Cox. No, it's
Andrew
not.
Cox. Andrew Cox.
Andrew.
Okay. Justin, man. You dingus. Sorry, I didn't mean to mess you up.
I feel like I'm in my dating days again, Stephanie. My name is Samantha. So anyway.
Andrew Cox.
Oh.
What were you saying about your cloud there?
Funny thing about my cloud, it's right here under my pants. Anyway, so let's see. Oh my God. Stop it. What else do I do to secure the Microtik? A lot of people like to VPN in. I do that if I was on the road. So I have L2TP set up to accept the connection from, I guess, any IP. And I secure that with IPsec. And I could log in that way, but typically I'm only in one of two places ever. So that's pretty much what I do. Haven't gotten any, nothing's gotten through since I've done that. Does anybody else have any ideas on that?
You know, while you were talking about it, I was thinking your road warriors, you know, because Microtik, like Andrew said, you can just put in a DNS name. So you could have Bob Smith at whatever your company is .com, right? And it'll resolve that address and add it to the firewall and to the address list, right? So you can use that in firewall rules. And maybe your road warriors, you could just have a little dynamic DNS client running on their laptop. So whenever they connect somewhere, it just updates that, and then, you know, then they can come in. So I guess if you needed to firewall your VPN services for, you know, 0 day, I guess,
yeah,
maybe that's sort of one way you could get around it. You know, and if it's already auto running on their laptop, they don't have to think about it, and possibly that could do a thing. I don't know.
So I was gonna say, I was gonna add to what I was saying before. That admin list that I have, obviously, yeah, but I've got my home router, I've got my mom and dad's place, but I have another little Microtik I take around with me, which acts the same thing. I connect up from a hotel, and it can just, because it updates its DNS entry automatically, all the other devices have it in the list. Obviously, you're allowing anyone from the hotel, but the chances of 50 people in a hotel wanting to attack you versus the rest of the world is quite low.
Yeah. I mean, you're limiting your attack vector to the 50 people that happen to be in that hotel. So,
or port knocking, just despite how how old and sort of basic port knocking is. Like, that is my fallback. If I'm in a place where it's not an IP address I was expecting to be on, or it's my phone or something that's going around, I can just hit the ports using a web client. Like, you don't need a port knocking client. You can just go HTTP myrouter.example.com port 123 port 456. That's all you need to do it. So it makes it really simple for anyone to do. And the same thing when I send these instructions to the likes of my parents, I will just send them three links. I'll be like, click on these in order, wait for about 30 seconds, and then click on this. Now you can log in, now you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. It makes it simple. I think sort of what Dave was saying earlier is people still use that, right? Because it seems so simple. And think about it too, if somebody was to say I'm doing a man in the middle attack at a Starbucks, right? And so I'm just, you know, just seeing what comes through, and I see you and your traffic, and you make three or four random port hits to an address. I'm not gonna suddenly say, oh my God, this guy's port knocking. You know, I mean, that's not what's gonna jump in my mind. I'm not gonna understand that. Maybe if this was some state actor, maybe if the Chinese government is monitoring you and trying to figure out what you're doing, maybe they'll go to the, you know, but I can't think of too many people that would legitimately think, holy crap, this guy's port knocking, and now I can, you know.
And then they still have to have either a zero day, they still have to try and collect your credentials, they still have to, it's only the first level of access there. And it's, I'm of the opinion, like, if a state-sponsored group is ever coming after you, you're fucked. Like,
yeah.
Let's be honest. Yeah. Like, pretty much. If Putin lays the smackdown on you, you're done.
Yeah, if the government wants to get a hold of you.
The first goal of security is to not be the lowest hanging fruit. It's like, if you can secure yourself better than Bob next door, who has no idea, you're much safer. Like locks on your doors. If you've got a better lock than the guy next door, you're much less likely to be a target.
Yeah, if you stick the security company sign in your yard and the guy next to you doesn't have it, you know, well, maybe they'll go over there. And that's like working at a data center. We've had, you know, tours come through with like college kids or maybe even high school kids sometimes. And, you know, I say, you know, after the tour, I say, all right, so you've got to get in through guards, through staff, through all of these locked doors. We have tons of cameras. I was like, so are you going to do that? Or are you going to learn how to, you know, just download a virus off the internet and try and spearfish people that work at that company? I was like, what do you think you're going to have more success from, you know? What do you think is safer? So it's definitely the path of least resistance is what people take.
Find the dumbest employee.
You know, it's funny. I'm part of a group that does security for like American infrastructure stuff. And it's funny listening to some of the people who do spear phishing tests on their own employees. You know, so they do regular spear phishing, you know, and it's not announced. They don't know when it happens, but they keep metrics on how many people click and, you know, what's effective and stuff like that. And it seems like, you know, a lot of these government organizations, I mean, every single time they do it, no matter how much education, they get somewhere between 10 and 20% of people to some degree or another going further in one of those spear phishing tests than they really should. So it's pretty interesting to think about. And I heard an account from somebody saying how, they acquired a company that already had been penetrated, but they didn't know that at the time. But the way it worked is somehow or another, you have, you know, company A, and they, got an email from company B from a domain that was almost the same, but slightly different. And then they answered it. Well, then this guy eventually, at company B, he was able to, from these legitimate sources, he was able to send an email and get that guy to respond to it from a very similar domain. So he made himself this proxy. So he would take an email that was sent from one company and then just copy and paste it into the email and send it to B and then back and forth. And so he made this, and I had never really thought about that, but he made himself a proxy point. And after 8 months, this company started getting acquired, and well, he's like, well, this is the time's right. And, he got them to change some bank credentials and stuff. What's funny though is
that what happened to Ubiquiti as well?
Very similar.
When they were dealing with that Chinese company, yeah. And there was some middleman along the way that Just take the money over here.
Yeah. Well, that was a huge amount. This was a small amount for these guys. But what I thought was funny is after it worked and they were getting money, they started getting money funneled to them. The guy kept copy and pasting emails like, hey, wait a minute. I just tried calling you and you didn't answer to verify this thing. And the other guy's like, wait a minute, verify what thing? I didn't do anything. You know, it's like, so he kept forwarding the emails back and forth about, hey, I think something's wrong. This, you know, this looks like it might be fraud. Yeah, it's pretty funny. So maybe it must have been some kind of automated system he added in that just shot it back and forth at that. Or maybe he didn't speak English very well. I don't know, but it was interesting. The links people will go to for this sort of thing, you know.
I've heard of this stuff happening with real estate as well, when houses are being sold and the routing numbers are changed on the fly by a third party who's in someone's email.
It's crazy.
My favorite implementation of this was the Tinder one, the one where you sign up for Tinder, you swipe left on a whole bunch of people until you get someone that responds, and you take copies of their Facebook page and everything. Then you create a profile that looks like theirs, and then you go through and do the same thing with a whole bunch of other people, and you end up matching them with someone else. So you're the middle person with two Tinder accounts matched to this guy over here and this girl over here.
So one end?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out where this is going.
Do you end up getting laid at the end or something, or no?
you can do those things where, like, you can help the guy along the way. Like, no, that's not what you want to say. You want to say this. Or the missed connections, like, yeah, we're going to meet at 12 o'clock at such and such. And meanwhile, he gets the message, we're going to meet at 2 o'clock at the place two streets over.
That sounds like so much work for so little payoff.
Yeah, really. Seriously.
I'll put a link. There's someone that did it to great effect. I think there's a YouTube video. I'll attach it so everyone can look at it. But yeah, same thing, like, you're just relaying these conversations and like, can you pay me back for lunch the other day? Yeah, I'll just put my bank account details in. No, I never got that.
I used to do that in grade school. I used to call up my friend and said, hey, I'll give you the math homework for the history homework. And then, you know, he would give me the history homework. And then I would call another friend and say, hey, I'll give you the history homework for this homework. And, you know, I just switch homeworks. And I would just be the guy in the middle. I was that dick.
Oh, you're ridiculous. The one wearing
the trench coat. I've got
wins. Jesus.
But about security in a microtick, I have a couple of, if we're still on that topic, are we?
Yeah.
All right. So long ago.
Yeah, really. We've gone into, I don't know, like proxy dating.
One of the many tangents.
But what I have here is in my microtick, and this goes a little beyond the exploit stuff, but it definitely includes it. So I have a bunch of rules, obviously, but before any of, let's say, in this example, TCP, before any traffic hits TCP, it goes through what I call TCP scrutiny. And it's a bunch of limiters. So if you have somebody that's trying to send more than 800 SYN packets per second, you get put into a list and you get beat. Hey, look who joined.
What if you just get really popular?
Yeah, look at that.
Oh, he has trouble.
Uh-oh, he's not smiling.
He's got a serial killer face on.
That's his fault.
And you wondered why he ran a hog farm. Get rid of the bodies, dude.
Yeah. God. So I have a TCP scrubber jump list that all TCP traffic has to go through before it hits any of my open ports to my internal network. Yeah, so that one with TCP SYN, that's a big one. I've caught about...
Come to you from...
Mars, apparently.
In the bottom of the ocean? Is that what that is?
Cut.
It's great. Oh, the
you're breaking up hard, okay. Dude.
I like that other facial expression that he was stuck on.
I am contacting you from a car.
Oh man, this is great.
Mike's a good multitasker. Yeah, I am in a car. He's also texting while he's driving too.
I'm in
switch to the other phone.
I don't have a very good signal.
Yeah, no shit. So, anyway, I was
little snippets of Vulcan logic. I am in a car.
All right, well, keep trucking. So anyway, keep trucking, Dave.
Yeah, after it goes through the limits, you know, it goes through, one of the things it goes through is how many sessions do you have open, new sessions do you have open with Winbox? So you can't just keep hammering away at Winbox. So after 20 sessions per IP, blacklisted. And the funny thing about, or what's really tricky about security when you start doing these, you know, lists or limiting of how many sessions or how many hits or whatever is, you don't, you make it too tight, you start blocking the good guys. So what I do is before I actually put a list that has been collected from supposed violators, I don't necessarily block them yet. I just let them stay in a list, and then I'll go through and see how many I've caught, and then I'll see, oh, is this IP, you know, where is it coming from? I'll do an errand lookup on it. And if they look like they're really legitimate, you know, trying to brute force their way in or hack their way in or just cause havoc, then I know this rule is working in a effective way. And then I put it into, I add it to a drop rule. But that's what I'm doing with TCP. UDP is a little bit different, but at least from the MikroTik, that's what I'm doing for security.
You know, I had a haplite one time that I had DNS open to the world on. Yeah, I've done that. I mean, I think everybody's done that at some point. And I was being used as a DNS amplification point, you know? So I put in a rule to, what was I doing? I think I was... I had it so that everybody who tried to use it was being added to an address list, and I was tar pitting them, and it worked great for about 3 or 4 days. And then, the router ran out of memory because it had so many people, using it.
Tar pit is such a bad idea. I get it. Its only purpose is to piss off hackers.
Yeah.
But you don't, because once they see that a port is open, whether or not they're getting response, it's like the swarm comes. And now you've effectively DDoS'd yourself.
Yeah, so, it's not a person sitting there answering, going, "Man, this is slow." It's a bunch of computers, and they're like, "Just try again."
Yeah.
I don't mess with that.
I had it on a customer that was getting audited. You know, they were having a scan done against their IP, and they said they failed because they had like 65,000 open ports on that their device. And yeah, because I was tar pitting. Like, what I had a script that if somebody did a port scan, it would automatically add them to an address list and then tar pit everything they tried to do. And so they said, yeah, every single port you have on your device is open. And by the way, it took us a day and a half to run the scan. So please never do that again to us. Yeah, they were pretty upset about it because it kept failing. And yeah, they weren't best pleased. So yeah, I think resource-wise, it's better just to drop that stuff. If you see it, just drop it quick.
Why the hell would anybody open any service that they don't want people to access? Like, how do you keep port 53 open? Like, why would you do that? Do you host your own DNS server or?
No, using the local MikroTik as a resolver, you know, like answer. Wipe the firewall rules?
If you turn that on without any firewall rules by default, you're instantly answering on all interfaces.
Yes.
Yeah.
So why would anybody want to remove the explicit denials for input and forward? Why wouldn't you have that there?
Because I don't need no router telling me how to live my life.
From working, like.
Whoa, everyone's talking at once. What?
Exactly.
They're along the same line.
Yeah.
Like people are going, something's making my Xbox not work. These rules, they're dropping stuff. That could be my traffic. I'm just going to drop all that. Like, I'm going to remove all that.
Well, if that's how you're going to... Yeah, if that's how you're going to... I have a customer that did that. They have their own IT person.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I can make things work if I just disable the deny drop rules. So, yeah, dude, no. And their MikroTik is hacked to shit. And I've told them, and they still don't want to fix it because things are working.
Yeah. It's like, what does Dan Harmon say at the end of his podcast? He says, drive fast, take chances. There you go, man. You just got to live interestingly.
All right.
Do it.
Bang hookers without a condom.
Oh, there you go. Back to the condoms, huh?
That was a conversation before we started.
It wasn't before we started. It was right as we started, and it's in the show. So let's talk about Sienna for a second. I did a week's worth of Sienna training. I'm about to start supporting a customer that does. They're doing a big fiber deployment. I mean, it's hundreds of miles they're starting to put in. It's going to be two rings and a big figure eight. And they decided on Sienna kit for whatever reason. I have no idea why. I had assumed going into it that they were going to be doing, you know, like optical DWDM stuff, you know, like ROTAMs and stuff. So I was, you know, I mean, I was prepped. I was ready for that. And it turns out they're using Sienna Metro Ethernet switches. That's all they are. So this is a big layer two network we're building instead of a big layer, you know, zero, one, whatever.
So they brought in the consultant after they already made a decision?
I think the vendor had their interest at heart whenever they made this decision to do this stuff. So we're doing Sienna 3930s, which are, say, like 10 port boxes with, they've got, what is it, like 10 interfaces. Eight of them are, I think, what are they? They're just gig. Eight of them are gig, and then two of them can do 10 gig back out. You know, I always thought it was interesting. You have NNI ports, right, which are like network ports that just connect to your network. And then you have UNI ports, which are user ports, right? They go to users. And you can only have two NNI ports on one of these boxes. So you can only designate two to go back to the... I never understood that. Why can't you just make them all a network if you wanted to? Why is there like a restriction? You know, I mean, think of it. These are switches, so you can only have two trunk ports back to your network. I just don't understand why you would...
So you buy a bigger one?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know. That always confounded me because Cisco does that same sort of thing in their Metro Ethernet stuff. And it's like, why limit? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But so they're doing...
It's a micro-tick where it's like, your port can be anything you want it to be.
Well, I mean, like on a regular switch, you could trunk every single port to other things in your network if you want. You know, I mean, they could be, you know, those network ports or whatever. They're also using these 8700 chassis, which are, they're pretty big. I think they're like 12U bricks, but their rings, around their rings, they're doing 100 gigs. So it's 100 gig interfaces, top and bottom. And I'm anticipating this customer in 4 years, they'll probably have, I don't know, at peak three gigs going across this thing, but they're building 100 gig rings. So it sort of blows my mind, you know, because the first thing I do when I think, okay, you're putting in the Sienna kit and it's just switches, what would I build it with? You know, probably be like Juniper or Cisco kit, and it would be a fraction of the price. And I'm pretty sure I wouldn't start with 100 gig. I know the 40 gig stuff is very inexpensive. If you guys were about to build a couple of rings and they were just going to be switches, what do you think you'd look at?
Up to 10 gig?
Sure.
Yeah, the Extreme stuff's been going pretty well for us. Otherwise, Juniper would probably be one of my next choices. Microtik's nearly there with all the features they've been adding to the CRSs. I mean, that'd drop the cost a lot, so I could afford to buy a lot more of the switches.
I know. So,
and,
go ahead.
For the IX, we've been building them out with Cisco Nexus, which is, because we get a very good deal on them. But if it were my money, I'd probably be doing, you know, used Brocade, used Arista, something like that. And, you know, some of them have 40 gig support, some of them don't. But, you know, that's one of the things where it's like, you know, I'd probably build it with like a passive DWDM system with like my 1310 channel being available for the 40 gig, you know, if I add it in the future, and then just start using 10 gig channels as I need them.
Well, I mean, even the older kit that's got 40 gigs, you could lag those together and you've got an 80 gig channel right there, right out of the box. So get a lot of bang for your buck in those areas, right? And then you've got the redundancy as well, so you could drop one and you're still okay. So some takeaways on the Sienna kit. The rings, around the rings, they're doing G.8032, which is kind of it feels like MST, like multi-spanning tree with a twist, right? It's sort of their own flavor. So it uses, it burns a VLAN and just sort of does a heartbeat around the ring. And if there's ever a break, then it just sort of reroutes around it really quickly. I think the convergence time is like 50 milliseconds. So that's nice, I guess. Everything is so obtuse in Sienna configuration wise. You know what I mean? So like in Cisco, you think, all right, a trunk port, you call it a trunk port. And by default, all VLANs go across, right? And you can limit which ones if you need to. Well, on these things, you have to, say on the 3930s, you have to create the VLAN like you used to in old VLAN databases, and then you attach or add a VLAN to an interface. And you can do that to a customer interface, and that works okay. On the 8700s, you create what's called a parent port. That's a physical interface. Then you create this thing called a sub port, which ties a physical to a logical. Then you create a virtual switch. You tie the physical to the sub to the virtual switch. And then you can go about attaching VLANs. They don't call them VLANs. They're VTag stacks. You attach those to the virtual switch, and then you tell it to go out this sub port and this. I mean, it's just, it gets crazy convoluted to do the same thing that you would say switch port mode trunk.
Switchboard mode. Seems like a whole bunch of spend money on our training so you understand how this works.
Jesus. And you know what's funny is they put all their documents. I try and Google how to do anything in Sienna. You can't. It's all behind their paywall. Like to get any of the documentation, it's all hidden back there.
So the only place I've ever seen this stuff used is Comcast, Ethernet private line, metro lines, and stuff. And they use the 3930 kits.
Yeah.
And inevitably, they never save the config, so something stops working after power loss somewhere. And also, we've contacted Sienna trying to buy that stuff before, so we can use it. They don't want to sell you just two parts of it.
Nah.
You've got to buy it a lot.
They want you to commit to a bunch of it. And
yeah.
So there's this thing called OneControl, right? It's their SDN controller. And eventually it's going to be replaced by this thing. I think they're calling it Blue Ocean or whatever. But OneControl, it's Java-based for one, which let's not say anything else because Thomas will never forgive us. But it's this Java-based interface. And some of it's neat, right? Once you do some of the configuration, you've got this stuff in there. You can say, click a node at the top and a node at the bottom and say, all right, create me an EVPL. And it will just say, you know, you can fill in extra stuff if you want to, or you can say find path and it'll show you all of the paths it has. And you can say, okay, do that up. And it'll just bloop, bloop, bloop. And it'll tell you what ports it configured everything, right? That's kind of neat. But if you want to do complex things like attach specific VLANs to rings, you have to do that in CLI. If you want to troubleshoot, you pretty much have to do that in the CLI. If you want to, say put an IP address on a VLAN to test, you create a CPU interface, then you add an IP to that CPU interface, then you attach that CPU interface to a virtual switch, and then you do a layer 2 transform to push and pop VLAN tags as it comes in and as it goes out of that virtual CPU interface, and then it'll let you ping. So it's like the simplest things are just mind-bogglingly difficult in this kit. I just don't understand it. So I said, you know what we were thinking about doing, you know, thinking about, you know, popping into this thing and how am I going to manage and support this? As I said, we were thinking about putting probes out at all the pops, and you know what I'm talking about, putting a micro tick at every pop. And I said, we would just stick that off of an interface, and whenever we needed to test, we would just associate that interface with the virtual switch. And he's like, oh yeah, you could do that too. I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to do that too. Because this is too convoluted and there's too many ways my techs are going to screw this up. I'm going to screw this up. Or we could just associate this thing with a virtual switch. Also, if you want to modify things, you can't. Like if you create an EVPL, like a private line, the only way to modify it is to delete it and add it back with the new settings. So there's really, you can't augment, like you create a ring, you can't really augment a lot of the configurations. You got to remove it and add it back. OneControl, another interesting thing is whenever it pulls the routers, it only looks at the saved config. It doesn't look at the running config. So if somebody makes a modification on the CLI, it doesn't know about it. right?
Until you save it to the yeah. startup config.
Yeah, you have to
stop and you can't undo it.
You have to save it to the running or save it to the startup config and then refresh yeah. one control. So it's supposed to be this magical box that controls everything. But
it sounds like a pile of shit, if you ask me. I mean,
That was exactly what I was going to say. It's like Sienna sounds like a pile of shit. Well, other than being the fact that it does 25 terabits per pair.
It's
taking up the future sponsors box.
No, it's just
that's the first time Hammond and I agreed on something. I'm so touched.
What it just gets me is just step one, it's overly complicated. You know, number two, it's very cost prohibitive. This kit is very expensive. I obviously can't, it's not my kit and I didn't buy it and I didn't do the agreement, so I can't talk about how much, but it's very expensive for what it's a switch. It's a switch. You know, that's got 8 ports of gig and 2 10 gigs. So it's very expensive when you look at it like that, right? There's other people that associate with the Metro Ethernet stuff. So I think one control is good for, moderately low level text to be able to click, create an EVPL as long as nothing goes wrong, right? It's great. As long as nothing goes wrong, everything's fine. And as long as they're doing those very simple tasks, everything should be okay. It's just everything else is very complex. And like in the 8700, you have to do a lot of pushing and popping. And then like when you're trying to do Q&Q with service provider tags, there's a lot of pushing and popping. And you have to do like a layer 2 transformation, push, tell it the Ethernet protocol ID, like 8100 for regular, or I forgot what it is for Q&Q. It's like 8188 or something like that. And then, you know, do the inner tag, outer tags. You got to do all these weird transformations and stuff.
Well, that I think same MikroTik works the same way with Q&Q. It's weird. You have to add like the CPU port to a switch group or to a VLAN group, otherwise it won't do what you want it to do. I tried doing it once. There was a lot of steps in there.
So is it as complicated as, say, a CRS doing normal switch stuff?
Like a Cisco CRS?
Or a MikroTik. It's so much easier now. Like, pick up one of the newest CRSs and check out. Once you need to learn this little bit, like how do you add these VLANs here? Once most of the stuff that switch chip abomination of configuration that used to exist.
Give me a model, because I'd love to look at
that. The CRS328. I'll send you guys a copy of a VLAN config for a customer switch. It's like 3-4 lines of script, or you can do the same thing in Winbox, and they've made it good.
Good.
I don't know the technical term, but fire made it
good. That's awesome. All right,
good.
Yeah, so I don't know. I haven't really gotten in. And if you could see the cardboard boxes right there. I've got two Sienna switches that are worth more than the car I drive, the 3930s, that I can test with. You know, to actually figure out how some of this works. So the training was slapdash. It was really fast. Some of the stuff we put together, I think it might work, but all of our kit was in another state or another country. I'm not sure. So I couldn't actually put anything on either end and test, you know, like, does this really work or how does this work? So, I can actually do some configurations and test, which is going to be nice, to see if the things work the way I think they work. But of course, I don't have an 8700 because those are huge. And I didn't want the liability of an 8700 sitting in the trunk of my car. So we'll see what happens soon. I think probably within the next month, I'll be doing some live stuff on this. But so far, I haven't been impressed for Metro Ethernet kit. I'm sure there's people listening here that have used other people's ME implementations and, you know, seen as the best they've ever used. I'm just not one of those people, unfortunately.
Greg, so, if you have used big boy equipment, please comment and tell us, you know, what you've used and what your thoughts are.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like, to me, it comes down to sort of three things. Like, there's a cost factor, there's how easy is it to do what you need to do, And is there a good feature set? And then how reliable is it? And I think every vendor we talk about here sort of generally fills two of those boxes at a time.
Yeah.
Like the old fast, cheap, good, but...
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Different set of pillars.
Yeah.
Craig, why the hell would you take on a project like this? You just like torturing yourself? Or is there a lot of money?
Well, it's the data center I 9-to-5 for that's taken on the project. So,
so you've been volunteering.
She doesn't have a choice.
yeah, it's one of those things. I don't know, man. I at the end of those days, I was just broken, you know, and I haven't really pushed myself and learned something new like this in a long time. And you know, it honestly felt good to stretch my mental legs, as it were. You know, at the end of all of it, it felt good, and I'm glad I did it. And I'm sure I'm going to be glad I'm messing with this kit. I just wish it was the optical stuff. Honestly, I was hoping, you know what I told the instructor was that, I hope I can figure out how this stuff works well enough to, get some of this stuff on eBay and actually deploy it somewhere on my own. He laughed and said, you know, good luck to me. So there you go. It is what it is. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. I'll give an update after I get a little runtime on it. Let's see. Something else, switching gears like we like to do. A question that popped into the Slack the other day, which I thought you guys would probably have, you know, everybody's probably got a different way they would do it, is monitoring customer networks that have overlapping subnets, and how would you do that, right? So here at my network operations center, you know, I've got a NetXMS or Cacti or WhatsApp or whatever it happens to be, and I want to monitor several customers, and you may do some of this to an extent already, Dave, say they have overlapping subnets inside and you need to monitor some of their servers. What method would you guys use to do that? Ooh.
Cricket.
Well, I already know how I would do these things. I'm just curious to see what you guys would say.
Different monitoring systems.
I'll just say multiple VMs.
Yeah, you could, I guess.
And to be fair, that is the least technical solution.
Yeah.
And it just works.
Say you're using licensed software though. if your software, you're having to pay for it, you probably don't want to. It's for backup purposes. I get it. Yeah, I'm on board.
Make sure it works in multiple locations.
I don't know. So one thing that popped in my mind was, and I think maybe even Miller said it, was more specific IP addressing, right? So say they have overlapping subnets, but you only need to monitor, say, 192.168.100 from one customer and 192.168.90 from the other. You could just do, you know, a /32 route to that one customer and a /32 route to the other, right? So more specific wins in your routing table. So that would sort of fix it. What else could you do? You could do NATing, I guess, from the customer, like a one-to-one NAT scenario where they're NATing when they're coming to you and vice versa, back and forth.
Some monitoring systems have, like, you know, distributed polars. Maybe you could, maybe that would work, that scenario, where you'd have the polar in their network. And so you don't know how to, you know, speculatively, you don't have to know how to reach everything in the network. Just you reach the polar, and then the polar reaches everything.
Yeah, NetXMS does that pretty well.
What was that?
Actually, we do that with a Raspberry Pi. Just throw a Raspberry Pi into the network, and it just reports all back to the NetXMS server. And then, yeah, no big deal.
Like Thomas is here, but not.
Yeah, let's move on. This
topic sucks. I was just curious to see if you guys had anything interesting to say. Alrighty. So let's see. I had kind of a throw it out there and see what you guys thought, discussionary sort of one, about working with unresponsive customers. I was just curious what you guys thought. So say you've got something project-based and you're trying to get this customer, you know, like he's the linchpin. He's got all the information and you're trying to get him to respond back. Maybe they've even already signed paperwork for whatever this project is and they're unresponsive. What's the tips and tricks you guys have?
That is so easy.
Oh,
You write emails to this person and you carbon copy everybody involved in the project and maybe even some people that aren't involved in the project. And that kind of coaxes them into wanting to reply because they're looking like a dildo in front of everybody by not replying, you know? And I don't know. I mean, that's what I do. And you could be nice, but once somebody sees everybody's email address in the company on there, you get a response.
I have to say, I do not respond well to that sort of thing. I would, if I got an email like that, I would respond directly to the person. Like if that's the response they were looking for, I would respond directly to them. But I would, and this is just me, I would never engage in CCing everyone else on it because I'm like, it's wasting everyone's time. Like,
I would respond. That would not be the first attempt, obviously.
Yeah, Dave does that on the second try.
If you're trying to get someone to respond and you've tried every diplomatic and every respectful way of going forward, then yes, then the gloves are off. Then fuck it. You know what? I'm including everyone.
I don't know. It happens. I see it happen when people want something done and like, especially if the reason I wasn't doing it is because one, they're stupid, or two, it's a dumb request, or
When you reply all and just say that's stupid, well, that's a dumb request.
I don't engage in that. If someone sends me an email and everyone else on it, I'm like congratulations, I'm okay, I'm gonna have to respond to this, but I would always only respond to that person. And if someone else came and asked me, hey, why didn't you respond to that, I'd be like, I did, I just took it off list because it wasn't worth, like, I don't deem it worthwhile wasting everyone else's time. And that would, to be honest, like, that would make me more frustrated with you. I wouldn't want to continue to engage. So I understand where you're coming from, but I think I disagree in that sense.
Wait, hold on. Andrew seems like a sweet guy. So
yeah.
I don't think he would not do something unless it was... But wait, let's back up.
I ignore emails all the time. Like, stuff comes through, and I'm like, I am too busy to deal with that, and I am too nice to tell you to fuck off. So.
Yeah, really. I don't need dick enlargement pills. I ignore those, too. I think we need to set the stage a little bit better. Not just a support request or some sort of something that the customer wants you to do in their network or to their system. I thought Greg said... on a project where you have a team of people that you're working with and everybody's agreed we're going to do this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. In that situation.
So I recently, recent scenario, the thing that really triggered this was, I'm going to be very vague. There's a guy I'm working with, and as far as the project goes, he's the top of the food chain. He's the man at the top of that pyramid. And
stop right there. Don't talk about it.
Extremely unresponsive. I mean, he'll never listen to this, hopefully. No, just extremely unresponsive. And oh man, you know, it's like with this stuff, especially when it's my personal stuff, I try and always be Johnny on the spot if I can, you know, and just get things back. You know, it's, I want to be very responsive, very respectful of people. So, cause it, you know, it's like for me, like if I show up to a meeting or, there was a meeting I was supposed to show up to the other day and I completely missed it and I felt like a total DB, and I told the guy about that. But if you show up late, it's like you're basically saying that your time's more important than mine, right? If you don't at least apologize for it, you know what I mean? It's like you're saying that my time doesn't mean anything to you and you don't care about it. Well, fair
Greg,
enough.
Just let it out. Greg,
no. So it's no, it's just, you know, you're having to beat this person up and beat this person up, and you're the one delivering a service or a good to them, you know, and you've already worked out the details. It's like, I just don't understand, you know, where do you go from here? You know, cause you still have to be cordial to these people, especially when, you know, they're paying you a lot of money or what have you, you know, and, For me, it's like I'm also the kind of person that if a waitress gives me the wrong food, I feel bad about saying, hey, this is the wrong thing. You know what I mean? It's like there's something in my brain that prevents me from
being a douchebag. Yeah.
Well, no, it's not even being a douche. It's just saying the thing I need to say. You know what I mean?
You're empathetical. That's a great quality to have. I think in your situation, you got one of two choices. If he's top of the chain, dude, you either kiss ass hardcore or you start protecting your ass. And I think those are your only options because you're dealing with life or death situation here. It's your ass or your ass. You know, so prepare.
So something I've done in the past that actually worked is when somebody was unresponsive, there's a website called Potato Parcel. And you type in a message, you send them like $15 and they write it on a potato and mail it to the person. And so all I said was, hey, please answer my emails. And I sent him a potato that had that on there. The guy started answering my emails. It was pretty incredible. So I was just curious if like right, a potato shows up at your door that says, please answer my emails from Greg. You're probably going to go answer my emails. I was just curious if you guys had any special tips or tricks that actually,
that's similar to and on a much higher road than what my idea was.
Bag of dicks.
Well, no, I'm just saying, go take a dump on his doorstep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'll make you that's feel better.
I don't know. You know, it's like there was, I can't remember what. It was some sales training, Sandler sales training. And one of the things they talk about is pattern interruption. And so if you sort of like 180 against what people are expecting, they have to stop and actually think about what you said or what you did, right? And so I think mailing somebody a potato is very different than what you're accustomed to, you know? So I think it was a good pattern interruption, if you will. And I was just curious if you guys had any other tricks up your sleeve.
It hasn't been effective in getting our result, but it caused conversation. Remember that cake that Hurricane Electric baked for Cogent to get them to try to do IPv6 peering? Midwest IX has sent several cakes out to people that said, you know, we'll join, just not now, later. After a couple of years of that, you know, we'll mail them like a cake. And they talk about it and they laugh and they don't join anyway. But you know, it definitely at least gets people talking. You know, it breaks the cycle.
By the way, is that from Tony Robbins? Pattern interruption?
No, it's from the Sandler training. Although all those guys, I mean, it's very incestuous, the sales training stuff. You know, who knows? Yeah. Where any of that stuff really originates. That's interesting, though. It works.
I did read it in Tony Robbins' book, Awaken the Giant Within. It's pretty good, but anyway.
I've done the whole cake thing. I found the cake was less of a success than just being Australian in America. So to walk in and like you've got the big signs like no salesman, like don't come talk to us. I'm like, g'day, how's it going? And you're like, you Australian? Yeah, I am. Do you know Steve Irwin? I used to live down the road from him. I'm here to talk to you about something.
Yeah, it wasn't fair. So Andrew comes over here and it's like he's got a magnet in his ass. Just everybody just comes in. And I go to Australia and nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, because you look like
they see your kind on TV.
I know. That's what he told me. He said, we watch American TV all the time. But what's funny is if you're polite to people, they assume you're Canadian. So everybody was asking me if I was Canadian. I was like, no, dude. Do I sound Canadian?
Because the other thing is because of that perception, if you ask an American, if you ask a Canadian, are you American? Like, they're likely to get offended. Whereas if you ask an American, are they Canadian? They're just like, no. What?
Yeah, it was confusing because it was at least three or four times. It probably at least four times somebody asked us, my wife and I, if we were Canadian. Yeah. It wasn't like a one off.
Ask them if they're Canadian. You can't go wrong there.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt anything.
You could just tell the Australians that you're Peter Garrett's son. of Midnight Oil. You got that look going on, you know?
I have no idea what we're talking about. I'm not that old. I don't get that reference. It doesn't work.
I understand that reference.
Seriously? By the way, just FYI, the people of Australia, from what I've been told, love Peter Garrett. Love him.
Went into politics was quite amusing to everyone.
Okay, but I heard he's been doing some really awesome stuff.
Yeah,
for his people, so.
Like, but anyway, not bad. Not a bad bloke.
All right, cool. That's right. That was a compliment. Okay, say fucking thank you.
just to swing back around for a second. You talking about like people being good, bad, and that the people that won't respond to you or that come late to meetings and things like that. There's an old saying that I like to harp on about to people, and it's never assume malice when stupidity will do.
Yeah.
And quite often these people who are late or who don't respond to things or just don't get it, it's very, like, I've had very few interactions with people in my working career where someone has actively been trying to cause me problems. Like,
yeah.
It's, in most cases, it's either that they don't care, they don't understand, they're just an idiot. Like, and you can put it down to that. It's like, this when someone comes to the meeting late, it's probably not anything to do with you. It could be that they're lazy. It could be that they just had a really great lunch and they didn't want it to end because they hate their job.
It's just, I mean, you could sum it up by saying it's just not professional. End of story.
Well,
I don't
it is not professional, but that's, you're always going to encounter that, and it's what I'm trying to say is you can't let it be a reflection on you. It's not you that it's targeted at. In most cases, I'll say, like, there are exceptions, but it's if someone can't be bothered, then it's not your fault. It's not. And in most cases, it's not your problem to deal with anyway. If their management has any brains, then they'll see that person's not responsive or not doing their part. Like,
yeah. So something I heard or maybe read or I don't know that I thought was really interesting is they said that some people get promoted to incompetence. Basically, so they rise to a certain level until they're too incompetent to go any higher. But they said it's interesting, people who find themselves in that position, because if they knew enough about what they're doing to understand they were incompetent, they wouldn't be incompetent. So they're sort of stuck in this spot and they don't realize that they don't know enough where they are. But it's something also I thought was interesting too is that, you know, so say for me, myself, I've done a lot of personal growth, right? A lot of personal development. I became introspective, like, once I hit 30 and tried to figure out things about me that I don't like or things that are weird, figure out why they do it, why I'm doing that, and then correct them, right? So I look at myself as like an actor in a movie, right? So when you're watching a movie, you're on the outside, you see all the characters, you understand their intentions, their motivations, and you know why they're doing the things they're doing, right? And you can figure out what's fixing to happen. But the actors in that movie, they don't have a clue, right? So until somebody from the outside tells me I'm doing something or helps me figure these out, I don't understand that, right? So say I was really shitty about time management and working with people. If nobody ever tells me, in the right way, mind you, that I'm being shitty, how am I going to know I'm being terrible or unprofessional, right? So I'm not saying that you're having real difficulties with a potential customer or a customer and you say, hey, you're being really horrible at these things. I'm not saying that's a thing you should go do, but, you know, and I tell everybody, if I'm doing something wrong, how do I know I'm doing it wrong if you don't let me know? You know, how do I fix it? So it's, is that something you should think about broaching with these people?
Yeah, I want to respond to that in two different ways. I recently joined a bike team, and when you ride in a team, the mentality is very, very different than when you ride alone or just with like two or three people. So I actually really appreciated this one person telling me everything I was doing wrong. Like everything. But you know what? I honestly really did appreciate it. And her and I are now pretty awesome friends when we go riding.
Well, how did she give you that information though?
Oh, well, she's not very diplomatic about delivering information. She wasn't yelling. I'll say it like this. She wasn't yelling. But she was, she would say, you're not supposed to do that, or you have to do things this way. Or she wasn't very, you know, sugarcoating things, because we're talking about safety here. You know, what one person does affects everybody in the group that's behind you. So there's certain ways to pull off the front. There's certain ways to, you know, call on from the back that there's no cars or change lanes or anything. But so I really appreciate that. And I mean, I hope if you guys ever see me doing something wrong, you would tell me the same. And the second thing is, I didn't want to bring this up ever in a show. It's not bad. But Greg, when you speak, sometimes you speak like a psychologist. And I love that about you. I really do. And I'll tell you how I know, and I'm qualified to even make that statement, because I've been in therapy for like 20 years, all right? I finished therapy like 4 or 5 years ago before I moved to California, and I just got to say, that is one thing that is awesome about you. You definitely sound like a psychologist, not like Dr. Phil psychologist, but like...
So you're like saying I should start taking patients?
Dude, seriously, I think if you ever wanted to get into a different profession, I think psychology would be awesome for you.
No, yeah. You know, at the core of it, I always have to figure something out. I always have to conquer something. I have to know how everything in the world works. Like, I've always wanted to know how does my toilet work? How does a water tower work? How do transformers work? You know, more than meets the eye, obviously. But ultimately, I have to understand how things work, right? And so I'll figure things out. Like I did sleight of hand for a while, you know, until I figured it out, and then I don't do it anymore, you know. And what's the one thing I can work on and figure out and never finish, never complete, never be 100% satisfied with? And it's
cold
me.
Fusion.
Yeah, there you go. No, man, right? It's like ourselves, right? We can always build ourselves. We can always be better. We can always be better friends. We can always be better mates, husbands, wives. You know, we can always improve. Until the day I die, I want to be learning, you know? And that's why I like you guys so much, is that I learned so much from you. So for so much of my life, I had to do it on my own, right? So, and that all comes from childhood bullshit, right? It's like I had to be on my own. I had to figure it out on my own. I couldn't ask for help. And this group right here were honestly the first people I ever allowed myself to ask for help for, right? And for me, that was being vulnerable, right? And it's whenever somebody's making themselves vulnerable, that's hard to do, right? And so it's hard to say, I suck at this thing, help me with this thing. But you definitely, oh man, my life changed 180 when I figured out there's people that not only I know that are smarter than me, because I always used to be afraid of people that were smarter, like Cox. He used to terrify me, that scripting stuff. Just because he's so good at it. And like Thrift, fuck a guy. He terrifies me about everything. He's so smart, right? Because I was afraid to say the wrong thing. And then they would say, hey, you're an idiot. You know, that imposter syndrome thing, right? And so being able to let that go. And obviously there's some people that you see on the forums or you see on Facebook that obviously make it known that, you know, they're not the hospitable type. Right? That kind of burn you down. But there's so many people out there that do want to help. And that's why I love this community that we're building, that we're part of, you know, that it is people that you can't ask for help. I know this is super tangented. But I'm not even sure where we started, but I do like the ability to ask people, you know, can I do this thing? Should I do this thing? And I love when people give me feedback, like you were saying, you know, like, hey, you know, as long as you broach it in the right way, you know, it's like, hey, Dave, you know, it seems like you were a little wide out in the street, or I don't know what biking guys talk about. Right. But also when you're talking about that, that's part of your team. Right. And you guys are acting as a single unit, you know, kind of one mind, you know, a bunch of guys in a foxhole sort of thing. But what if this, in my scenario, this guy doesn't consider himself part of my team. You know what I mean? It's like we have a very different sort of relationship. So I definitely understand, you know, giving positive or constructive feedback to, because I don't like to call it criticism. I like to call it feedback, right? Positive feedback to somebody in your team, your constructive feedback, you know? I see like you're doing it this way, and I think it would be better if you did it this way, right? But how do you give that positive feedback to somebody that's a vendor? You know, why? Most people don't have problems telling that to vendors, but...
You start out with a compliment. Client. Start out with a compliment.
The compliment sandwich?
Well, yeah, totally. You say, look, you know, I really like the way you handled that. But I think I might suggest a different way to handle it. If it ever came up again, instead of doing it this way, do it that way. Maybe you might want to consider that. You know, look at the picture. You know, you can deliver something in a very nice way, and your thought definitely gets across. I think that's one way to do it. But just to circle back about what you said is huge. That's my life also completely changed, like 180, when I decided to be vulnerable. Like just completely jugular exposed vulnerable. Before I met my wife, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Everybody hates dating. Dating sucks. Unless you got like a 10-foot cock, you know, then it's great. So dating sucks, and you got to go on 1,000 dates before you find someone that's halfway decent. Long story short, I always told myself, like in my adult life, you can't be in love unless you're vulnerable. There's no way to do it any other way. So when I decided, fuck it, I'm just going to be vulnerable. And if I get fucked over, hey, I give it my best. And the second I decided that, I actually met my wife and I went like all in. I was totally in and just being 100% vulnerable. And dude, she was living with me after 2 weeks and we got married 9 months after, and it's been great since. So that's a happy little ending for being vulnerable. Now, granted, there's going to be 1,000 stories of when you are vulnerable and you get completely fucked over. Don't do that in business. Okay? Don't reply to that email with your bank account number that says that they want to transfer you $12 million from, like, you know, out of Zimbabwe or something. But yeah, totally. Totally get you on that. And yes, there is a very effective way to give, I call it criticism, feedback criticism. I do, because if somebody tells me I'm doing something wrong, that's awesome, because I get to learn from someone that knows more than me. And they are actually giving me the time to teach me or to let me know, which means, A, first of all, I'm worthy enough. In their eyes, we are almost like peers. Okay, if nobody took me seriously on a bike team, nobody would even tell me that I'm doing anything wrong. They would just drop me and let me, you know, fall off the back. But because they saw me as a peer or as someone that takes this very seriously, I go riding 4 times a week for 40 miles every time, which I don't think is a lot. But anyway, they saw me as someone that takes it seriously and a peer, and they all gave me pointers, and now they don't need to. Now I'm one of them, which is great. So yeah, there are benefits to getting, you know, to being humbled, to being vulnerable. But at the end, with the right attitude and doing the right things, it works out.
For sure. Is this getting too deep for you, Miller?
You did say something about 10 feet earlier, so. I'm only 6 foot.
Buzzing. No. This is super tangent. I don't think we've fallen this far down the rabbit hole in a long time.
Everybody could relate to it. I don't care who you are.
I know.
Brothers Wisp, and also things what help you with your daily life.
You know what's funny is I heard there's this guy who does a lot of podcasting named Merlin, man. He's hilarious. I love him. But he said people come to a podcast for the content. They find a podcast rather for the content, but they stay for the personalities. You know what I mean? So it's, they don't keep coming back because they want to hear about OSPF and BGP, right? You can only go so far with that before you want to slit your throat. It's the personalities that make you stay engaged and interested. And, that's why I love having you three particular assholes on here that don't show up very often is because you do are very interesting people. I love talking to you. So this is going to take 30 seconds. 10 years ago today to this date, my wife went to the hospital, was in there for 2.5 weeks in ICU, almost didn't live. So on this day, I generally try and reach out to my friends, the people that I care about, people that matter to me, and say, I really appreciate you guys. Andrew, it's been a long time, brother. Dave, I enjoy it. Miller, you're a dynamite fucking guy. And I'm so glad I have you guys in my life and call you friends. I don't have many. I know you guys have lots, but I don't. So it's actually really important to me. All of you guys listening, I'm glad you guys are listening. I hope we can make a difference. I know in life it feels like sometimes you're screaming into a void, but I don't know. Think of it like two parallel lines. If you shift one just a little bit, you know, after 1,000 miles, you know, they've either crossed or they're completely far apart, right? So you don't know how much you're going to influence people. So put good stuff out there, man. If you've got knowledge, share it. I feel like it's not mine to hold and lock away. See if you can put some of that stuff forward in some way. So we're at like 1 hour and 20, and I don't want to talk any more about that. But Andrew, if somebody were interested to get a hold of you out on the internet, how would they go about doing that?
I am on admin@microtik-radarOS.com, or if you become a Patreon subscriber, you can join the Little Brothers Wisp and hit me up there.
For sure, for sure. Miller,
just if put people, the plug back in.
If Miller, if people want to, which plug? If people want to get a hold of you out on the internet,
Facebook and the Little Brothers Wisp channel, and I have a blog, dynastatic.net, which I haven't updated in a really long time.
Well, this kid's still got good stuff on there.
Yeah, you and me both.
Count me in on that one, too. Dave, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how are they going to do that?
Do not get me on Facebook. My Facebook is all political.
Okay. Right,
so I'm just going to stop at that.
He prefers you find him on his Pornhub channel.
So, no, you can get...
It's less interesting than his GitHub channel.
You can contact me at david@pennytone.com, which nobody contacts me on there. They just send support requests, and they, sale here and there. But, yeah, david@pennytone.com. Do not visit my Facebook page. Mike Hammett will agree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good that... Oh, no, he's still sort of connected. There he is.
Very much, yes. Yes, Dave's Facebook is dangerous.
It depends who's looking, right?
All right. Let me do Mike's outro for you. If you want to get a hold of me, you can find me at PayPal. And to which then I say, if you actually want to get a hold of Mike, facebook.com/thebrotherswisp. He's the cat always putting up new content. He's the one answering your messages. He's the guy keeping his finger on the pulse, and he's trying to keep you clued in. Is that pretty accurate, Mike?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You need to actually tell people what your PayPal account is and see if anybody actually gives you money.
I'll send him a potato.
All right. If you want to get a hold of me, I'm greg@gregsoul.com. You can find my blog, gregsoul.com, where I very occasionally post stuff on there. You can find us, obviously, if you're listening to this, at thebrotherswisp.com. Or if you want to join the patron-only Slack, as Andrew says, patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. Jump in there. Send us questions, comments. Oh, yeah, if you want to do it old school email style, it's contact us at thebrotherswisp.com. You can send us an email, and we'll try and roll that in. If you guys have any questions, comments, please send them at us. If all this additional conversation was not your bag, let us know. If you thought it was mildly interesting, maybe a little too much exposition, who knows, let us know about that too. If nothing else, thank you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Catches.